Welcome back to the Computer Corner, right here, News Radio 620 KTAR. We've got free lines open, so I'm going to run down the phone number because it's a rare thing, and if you jump on early, you'll get a slot. It's 602-277-5827, 277-KTAR. We're talking today about protecting kids from internet predators. We're talking about the dangers of things that are online when it comes to your kids and them being online, and things you can do as parents to help protect your kids and make sure that they're safe and not in harm's way. And Ken now is running back into the studio because he thought he could take a break longer than the rest of us.
No, I'm just fashionably late.
Fashionably late. I see how that works.
Once every 10, 12 years. So, yeah, you're telling them what we're doing, I heard.
Yeah, we're talking about, you know, safety of your kids. Your kids actually are like in the prime target audience, I think. Your kids are in that screenager, teenager age where they're probably the biggest concern for parents out there as far as being on the internet. And they're out doing things like building MySpace sites, and probably not your kids, but lots of kids their age are. And they want to go out and post all this great information so that all their friends can come and see it. And they don't realize that there's a lot more danger out there than just their friends looking at things.
Well, and we see that even with older individuals that we've been exposed to, thinking that something they put up on the internet, well, nobody's really going to see this.
Right.
Cause there's 600 million other people could be seeing it. You have no control over who's going to see it.
Well, but I didn't tell anybody about my friends what my secret name was.
Yeah.
And I'm anonymous because it's the internet, right?
Well, when it comes to these, and Mom and Dad, if you've never visited MySpace.com and your kids are kind of living there, because they do, whether you like it or not, anybody under the age of 21 lives at MySpace.com, and anyone over the age of 21 has no idea what it is. It's basically a singles bar for teenagers, and of course, target-rich environment for predators.
It is. If you go there, it does not look very PG.
No.
And or even PG-13.
The number of 12, 13, 14-year-olds that are co-mingling with, you know, who knows, people posing to be 17, 18, 19, 20. It's not that I recommend you tell your kids, forget it, don't ever go there. That's a decision you'll have to make. What you have to understand is MySpace.com is like a personal shrine to each of these teenagers. They post pictures up there, they have journals, they have their own little weblogs, they have, and the amount of information that they'll divulge about themselves is the big concern, because that's what predators use to make people think that they know who they are, or that there's some previous relationship, or I know somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody, and start to build a kind of a rapport and some trust online, which is very easy to do. Younger kids tend to look up to older kids. So 16-year-old girls love the fact that an 18-year-old boy is talking to them, and these predators understand that. And if you allow your child to post a lot of personal information up there, then it becomes easier for the predator to figure out exactly where or what part of the world they're in, and if they have any chance of kind of getting in contact with them or setting up a meeting.
Let's meet for real. Enough of this online stuff.
Right.
Right? And that's what that big Dateline thing was all about, is the predators, over time, building relationships with these people, with these girls specifically in a lot of cases, and getting them to be very comfortable, and then suggesting, hey, why don't we meet?
Or creating a fantasy world where they're looking for, you know, again, this is where MySpace can be very dangerous. Kids that are having problems reach out through MySpace and complain and talk about all their problems and what have you. And so predators, again, are looking for those weak souls, those wounded birds out there, and they start to build them up and then give them a reason to want to leave their current life and come live in this fantasy world that they've been developing over the last couple of years, last couple of months, however long that they've been interacting with these individuals. How many times have we seen stories where a minor child is sent or set up to go fly on an airplane to some other city to meet this person that turns out to be a, you know, 40, 50-year-old degenerate that's just looking to try to take advantage of somebody that's, you know, mentally just not capable of handling these things. And so, yeah, it sounds scary, and yeah, it's not likely that every single time your kid's going on the internet that they're going to be exposed to a predator. The problem is you don't know when it's going to happen. So understanding the dangers, just like, you know, my 16-year-old started driving in November.
That still freaks me out, by the way.
If, tell me. I'm her father. So, you know.
She's still not 16 in my mind, though. She's still like
that,
nine.
That little tiny thing.
I know.
Well, but the reality is she has to understand the dangers of driving, and at some point the lessons that she's learned from driving instructors and us and so on and so forth, that's all we can do is arm them with information. The problem we have right now with the internet is parents know less than the kids, and too many parents just give up, just assuming that there's no way they can outdo their kids when it comes to this stuff, because the kids, they're very intimate with this technology. Mom and dad just, I don't know, I don't even know how to get started.
Well, they got something mom and dad don't. They got time. Well, unlimited lots of time.
Well, they have something even more important than time, because guess what? Mom and dad have time. They just have to prioritize their time. There's always time for something this important. The problem is the kids don't have any fear, and mom and dad are full of fear. And so if we can do anything to break those fears down today and encourage you to take that first step, if you've never been to MySpace.com, I guarantee if you have teenagers in the house, they know all about it. They probably even have their own little space. Sit down with your child and ask them to show you their MySpace page. And if they're not willing to show it to you, that ought to tell you right there. There's probably a problem with some communication, and maybe there's something up there they don't want you to know is up there. Like a picture of them doing something that clearly they wouldn't want you to know about.
And it's very, because people feel like they're somewhat anonymous, because they're not putting their real names in most cases up there. They're not putting lots and lots of information that would really identify them. So oftentimes, it's a popularity place, and the way you get more popular is to get more friends and more people to put you as friends on their MySpace place, and the way you do that is by maybe showing things or doing things you wouldn't normally do to get more interest.
Unfortunately,
right?
this system is set up so a predator can say, you know what? Let's go trolling for 16-year-old blondes in Mesa, Arizona.
Yeah, you can get very specific.
There's a search engine right on MySpace, since there's hundreds of millions of teens, it seems like. It's some ridiculous number that's up there. There's no shortage of places to find exactly what the predators are looking for. So it's made it very, very easy for these predators to come after your kids. The kids are there. They're on MySpace. You need to understand and learn what that is and interact with them so that they understand the dangers and set some ground rules. And again, we've got a lot of this information posted on our website, including our kind of our primer for parents that are just getting started on here, our Safe Surfing Guide. That's got warning signs to watch out for, some basic tips, some of the most common mistakes mom and dad make, like I made light of it earlier. The worst thing in the world you can do with somebody that's under the age of, say, 16 or so, that hasn't had a chance to really develop some understanding that the world is a dangerous place, don't allow those younger kids to go into their bedroom and have a computer that's connected to the internet in their bedroom that they can close the door, lock the door, so on and so forth, and just kind of drift away into the internet. It's so dangerous. Not just from the standpoint of them kind of receding from standard social engagements, you know, where you're no longer seeing your child because they're always up in their room on the internet, but the fact that the predator then has even more time to spend and coddle your child to turn them into somebody that they want them to be as opposed to who your child really is. So don't take this lightly. Take a look at that Safe Surfing Guide. It's on our website. If you just click on, just go to datadoctors.com, you'll see free help for parents. Just click on that banner and you'll see the free downloadable Safe Surfing Guide. Shall we? We can
jump to some phones. I don't know that we have anybody that's necessarily right on topic yet.
That's okay.
Chad's is checking out who's there, and we're gonna.
That's
find
not a problem.
Out. But of course, the fungus of the computer corner. No.
I don't know.
I'm trying to even find where he's at.
Who's up there that's got an actual question?
I don't know who I just punched. I think it's William.
Hey, William, welcome to the computer corner. Are you one that has children, by the way? Oh, thank you, by the way. Do you have children in the house? And have you addressed and dealt with all of the fun that is managing the internet in your home? Good for you. You are unfortunately the exception. We're trying to make it the rule, but right now, just too many parents that are afraid to even start down that path. So I congratulate you on your efforts and continue to keep those. You know, I mean, it's really just education, right? So, what can we do for you today? Oh no, it's all split up. Yeah. Well, that'll certainly clear up some space on C, but that really won't solve the problem. And in fact, you could really mess things up, because you can't just take a program and say, Microsoft Word, I want you to be on D now, and just copy it over. And see, the program files are the ones that tend to take the most amount of space, unless you have a lot of music or video. Okay, what about pictures? Okay, so primarily what's filling up your C drive are your programs.
What a lot of people don't realize is that your computer, you have now this drive split up, and people just kind of assume that, well, as C starts to fill up, it'll just start putting stuff on D. But that's not the way it works. It puts stuff wherever you tell it to put stuff, and by default, whenever you install something, it defaults to the C drive. And so if you're just clicking and doing, which which everybody recommends you do the recommended place, right? They wouldn't recommend that. Then you start to fill that thing up. So you've got a couple of different options. One is to try to go in there and know or guess what to move, but you're still going to run into this problem probably down the road again, because it's only a matter of time before more things get back in there, unless you're very, very careful about where you install things going forward. The other choice would be to either get some software yourself or pay somebody to get in there and repartition, meaning change the sizes of C and D, or eliminate D altogether and just make C the entire drive.
Mainly because of the reason that you're running into. I mean, if you're highly technical, and all the really technical, nerdy, geeky guys out there, they're going to give you all kinds of reasons why you should have multiple partitions. And that's fine for somebody that can manage the technical part of this. But if you're not a technical user, this is exactly what the problem is. And you caught it in time because, you know, Windows XP is good at warning you. But in the past, you could actually go right to the point where you start to overwrite critical files on the system and cause corruption because you completely ran out of space. Windows needs a bunch of extra drive space for what's called virtual memory. That's where the danger lies when you start to fill up the hard drive. So yeah, for most people, unless there's a technical reason not to do it, we typically recommend that the C partition be, I mean, just make the drive all one partition as opposed to multiples.
We don't like to break up drives, because the for the average Joe who's writing documents, getting online, checking email, doing what people do, there's no advantage to splitting that thing up.
Well, it's a time thing. It's really not that difficult to do, but you have to have a special piece of software that will allow us to create or basically move that partition without damaging all your data. But regardless of that, before you do any of that, somebody needs to make very good backups of your entire system, because there's always a chance that something could go wrong during this operation, if you will. And if you don't have a way to go back to your what it would look like before you started, it can be kind of ugly. So, are you there? Hello?
We might have lost William.
William?
I don't know. But William, if you're still listening, or for anybody who is listening, yeah, there is software that allows you to do that. What we would do if something came into our shop, we would first make a complete copy of everything. So that if something goes wrong, we can always go back.
Both partitions.
We'd also do a couple of quick checks to make sure that there are no pre-existing conditions. You don't want to start doing some kind of surgery like this and find out halfway through that there's a major problem. So we would make sure that everything was okay first, and then we'd go ahead and do what needed to be done. As far as an expense, it probably would take somebody who knows what they're doing with the right software tools and things an hour, hour and a half of their time. So, what that might run is depends on where you go.
If you're a do-it-yourselfer, William, there's a program called Partition Magic, and there's quite a few partitioning programs out there, and you can just search for in Google or look at cnet.com and their software reviews.
The Partition Magic is the one that we kind of have found to be probably the easiest to use with good features and seems to reliably work. So
if both of those options are really kind of out of your comfort zone, what you want to do is go to the add remove programs. Before you remove a program, make sure you have the original disks. But you can remove, let's say, Microsoft Office. You can uninstall it and then do a reinstall of Office, but make sure and tell it that you want it to go to drive D during the install. And then remember to do that with every single program that you install from this point forward, and any other programs you can move over. So that's, again, a very time intensive kind of process, but it's something that you might be able to manage. It won't cost you any real grief or time, or excuse me, money, but it will cost you time if you want to go through that process. But you've got to be very diligent to make sure that everything in the future gets installed to D if you're going to stick to that partition.
Hope that helps you out there, William. Sorry if you dropped out, if it was us, but I think that'll get you down the right path. We got to take a quick break here. When we come back, we've got more calls, 602-277-5827, and coming up later on in the show, our Geek Speak of the Week, and more about internet predators and safety online.